League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Hello friends, it's Friday afternoon. We're on the eve of the biggest game of the season. Two of the three sides who are likely to claim automatic promotion from League One. Ipswich Town in third host Plymouth Argyle, top of the table at Portman Road, a full house tomorrow, and legend Marcus Stewart returning as well. Not a dry eye in the house there will be. Hopefully we'll be all smiles at the end of the game. And we are here, friends, with a special Kings of Anglia big match preview on a Friday afternoon. I'm Mark Heath. With me, the two men who will be at the game tomorrow. And I'm hoping they won't dampen my enthusiasm for it with their usual calm, measured approach. Andy Warren, how excited are you for this game?
I am really excited for this game. Genuinely, I am. Normally, our match previews on the podcast come at the end. Doesn't feel like that should be the case for this one, does it? It's too big. There's too much to discuss. The consequences are, while not season defining, they might be season shaping, and it's exciting. Really looking forward to it.
Watson, you're generally a little bit more excitable than Hutchie. Where are you in terms of
Mark, it's just the next 3 points, isn't it? And you just got to take each game as it comes, and nothing will be won or lost in the middle of January, and that's all I've got to say about that.
Absolutely.
No, of course I'm up for it. I'm bang up for it. It's a massive game. I'm joining you on the hyperbole train.
Superb.
There's big game. We've been looking forward to this one for ages, and it's here.
Jump on that train and ride it with me, friends. So before we do get to that game, though, I suppose it's only right that we should reflect a little bit on the old sexy stuff, the transfer stuff, which always, I know, is of most interest on these shows. There's not been anything happen, actually, since we last spoke, which seems quite a shock given the frantic pace of business to start January. There have been a few mumblings of potential outgoings. Gassana Hadmi linked with a move back to Burton on loan. And you spoke to Kieran McKenna yesterday, Stu. And pleasingly, he didn't say that's it. Our business is done. We've still got more than half a window left. So that's very good news for us. We'd struggle otherwise. What did he tell you?
He told me exactly that. It was, is that it? Are you done for business? Well, we'll see. The club's working hard behind the scenes. We've talked about a few positions. We've talked about a few attributes that we might want to add. Didn't want to give too much more away than that. But I think that's more than a hint that there's at least one more player to come, which is mildly surprising when you look at quite how many players Ipswich have got at their disposal now. All the players that have come back from injuries recently. Luongo, Broadhead, Hurst in the building. We'll come on to this chat in a bit. Several players are not even going to make the match day squad for this game tomorrow. So to add more to that, you're getting into the realms of risk versus reward of maybe adding, you know, tooling up for the weeks ahead and making sure you're kind of future-proofed against any major injury outbreak again, but also sort of maintaining that squad harmony and keeping everybody happy and feeling part of it as well. But yeah, sounds like there is more to come.
Yeah, just keep watching this space, please, friends. We need you to hit our web targets for this month, so don't go anywhere. Hutchie, what about outgoings? We talked before about Matt Penny. It sounds like Gassana Hadmi has been the subject of a little bit of interest from Burton as well, which is the only, am I right in saying that's the only team you could actually go to?
Yeah, he's played for them already, played for Ipswich, obviously, so that's it for him for this season. At least he either stays and scraps a few minutes here and there here, or he goes back to Burton on loan. And interestingly, the Burton manager, Dino Mumria, on his own club's website, just had some quotes saying that he'd spoken to Kieran McKenna about the potential to bring Gassana Hadmi back to the club. But the finance of that means that's not really doable for them, he says. for me, that it makes all the sense in the world for him to go back there for the rest of the season, because it's really difficult to see where any football whatsoever really is going to come for him here. So for me, if they can work out a way to get that done, it's something that should benefit everybody. In terms of incomings, even if Kieran McKenna had looked down the lens at you yesterday and just said, no other business, would you have believed him? I wouldn't believe Ipswich Town on the 12th of January saying no other business. They can, so I think they will.
I'll always believe Kieran McKenna. But yes, I know what you're saying. He's the temptation is high, isn't it? Mark Ashton, when he spoke to us on the podcast back in November time, said we'll be left with no regrets, no ifs, no buts. They'll leave everything on the table. A lot of people were obviously referencing 2015, where Ipswich didn't really strengthen from a position of strength and were made to pay for it. It's very different this time around. Different ownership, different funds, different ambitions. So, for all the talk at the end of this season, if Ipswich were to fall short, end up in the playoffs, losing the lottery of the playoffs, the mantra would be, we go again. It's a long-term project. We've come a long way from a team that finished 11th in the previous season. Remember that. All those things would be said. But I'm telling you, privately, they would be crushingly disappointed with the fifth successive season in League One. So they're going all out for it. Hopefully it's all going to come together. It's exciting, isn't it?
It is very exciting. If they were to add anyone else, though, where would you reckon on the pitch that would be? We've talked before about potentially someone coming in to bolster the defence. They're bristling with firepower at the top of the pitch. You can't see them adding any more there, can you? Or can you?
The only way I can see a striker coming in is that there needs to be a few things happen first. Ahadmi needs to leave. To Burton, I think. Then I think Caden Jackson will probably be now repurposed very much as a winger. We've seen sort of him used half and half as a striker and a wide man. I think Hurst's arrival, coupled with his performance off the right against Rotherham last weekend, I think we'll see him kind of playing the backup to Wes Burns. So you strip those two out of the forward unit and you're really looking at Ladapo and Hurst as your proper number nines, because I'm gonna bracket Broadhead in those sort of deeper lying roles. Is that enough? Two of them, and you could put Broadhead up there if you really wanted to. Maybe they'll put a young one on the fringes that comes in, you know, potentially a youngster from a Premier League club to kind of fulfil the Tyrese John-Jules void. I mean, let's not forget he's due back potentially towards the end of, I think McKenna said in his last press conference, a couple of months away. So, you know, he may come back still at some stage. But personally, for me, I think we're at the stage now where you could potentially do more harm than good by adding too many more to this squad. Any other areas, Andy?
I've always thought a right-sided defensive support for Danasian would be something that I would be looking at. And I still think that now. I think it's probably a difficult position for Ipswich to do anything in, because they've kind of turned Danasian into quite a unique player, playing a unique role, which means finding someone that can do that's quite difficult. But if they could, I would be thinking somebody in that position still. But again,
that spells the end for Kane Vincent Young, though, doesn't it? If you go out and sign a right back now, it's not a great,
no,
great look on him, is it?
No. Nope, he's out of contract in the summer, I believe. I think it probably would, yeah. But I've kind of, since the beginning of the window, I'd say that's not a number one priority, but they filled those priorities now. So it does kind of move, in my mind anyway, move up that list a little bit. We'll see, though.
Okay, so watch this space. Something else we should mention just finally before we get onto this massive, huge, gargantuan, titanic game between two of the best sides in League One is, of course, Mark McCauley Bonn. Stu, your mate Macca, has himself a new club, and it's a club in League One.
Yeah, he's signed for Charlton, which is where he very nearly signed on summer transfer deadline day. They went right down to the wire of the deadline, didn't go through. A lot's changed at Charlton since then, change of manager. And yeah, they've managed to revisit that one. And that scenario that we talked about, Macaulay Bond going to another League One club, has happened. Thankfully for Ipswich fans, it's not one of those teams vying for a promotion place. You wouldn't imagine Charlton, I think, have probably left themselves quite a lot of work to do to get into that top six. So we have to hope now that Macaulay Bond can bloody a few noses of those that Ipswich are vying with along the way at the top end of the season. But Charlton still to come to Portman Road still in April time, which will be interesting. But I think everyone wishes him that side, that game aside, all the very best, and hopes he can get back to enjoying his football again and scoring some goals.
Macaulay Bond will score the goal that means Town finished third, and then James Norwood will score the goals in the playoffs. that's a very pessimistic outlook. Let's talk about this massive game, boys. There's so many narratives around it. Hutchie, where do you want to start with this? You wrote an excellent piece, I thought, this morning, kind of tale of the tape style, comparing the two kind of teams in terms of their various stock in attack, defence, midfield, keepers, all that kind of stuff. Where should we start with this? I'll let you drive this bus.
I think start with, obviously, start with some praise for Plymouth, shall we? Who come into this game as the league leaders, 7 points clear of Ipswich, 5 of Sheffield Wednesday. They've had a brilliant season so far, and they're a very, very good team. If you flash back to Paul Cook's team going down to Home Park all the way back in, I think it was September of Paul Cook's first season in charge, and we could see then that they were serious business, that Plymouth team. They destroyed Ipswich down the left flank for long periods of that game. And from that day forward, you're kind of always going to have an eye on them as a serious player in this division. It didn't happen last season. They fell away quite painfully at the end, with Stephen Schumacher ultimately now in charge of it, taking over from Ryan Lowe. He's continued that, and if anything, has moved it on to another level. They're a very, very good team, and they're rightfully at the top of the league. So we'll start with some, before we then go into Ipswich's strengths, I guess, and where this game might be won or lost, I think just an acknowledgement of how good Plymouth are and how good a game this could be.
Stu, do you want to take that and run with it?
I guess we have to address the fact that the first thing I would say about Plymouth, and I hope this comes to pass tomorrow, is that if you look at the statistics, they're probably overperforming in terms of points. They've got more points than perhaps the stats suggest, because, and Kieran McKenna alluded to this in his press conference yesterday, they've won a lot of fine margin games, either through moments of individual brilliance at the top end of the pitch. And you can think back to the Ipswich game at Home Park, where both Mumba and Whittaker scored goals from outside the box, great finishing, and they've won a lot of games through brilliance from their goalkeeper, Michael Cooper, who would lay claim to the division's best goalkeeper, along with Christian Walton. So statisticians, easy for me to say, will tell you that can't last forever, and Ipswich's stats are more maintainable, and Ipswich have probably left more points out there, and Plymouth have maybe claimed more points than their performances. You know, I don't watch Plymouth week in, week out, so I don't know if that's fair, but going purely off the numbers in terms of chances created, chances conceded, Ipswich are quite far ahead of Plymouth. So you would hope that over the course of the whole season that will shake out, that Ipswich can close that gap.
Plymouth are obviously they're outstanding in those areas you've mentioned, aren't they? Home form, outstanding. Goalkeeping, outstanding. Productivity of lone players, until this point, outstanding. All it would take would be for those to drop from kind of outstanding to very good. And the whole level of Plymouth comes down a level, doesn't it? And like you say, Town, we've always talked about Ipswich being a very consistent team in what they do. I guess you definitely could argue that there's more kind of longevity in that, in what Ipswich are doing. But Plymouth have got it to this point, and they seem to just keep on going. So,
and reasons to believe that those things are going to tip a different way for both clubs, because Plymouth now obviously have lost Morgan Whittaker, who was a major part in that fine margins at the top end that I've spoken about. Lots of goals and assists from him. He's been recalled from Swansea. It remains to be seen if Callum Wright can kind of fill that void. I think he's a very good player. Liked him at Cheltenham, but big boots to fill there. And then Ipswich, the Achilles heel was not being clinical enough, not finishing teams off enough when they're on top, and they've gone out and signed two proven goal scorers at this level. So you'd like to think that Ipswich are going to tip one way, and Plymouth potentially could tip the other. And that's not being disrespectful to them. A lot of people have been saying, oh, Plymouth will drop away for ages, but they've been a winning machine at Home Park, and they've got something good going on there. But yeah, you would just hope that Ipswich, with the resource and everything they're doing, would kind of carry them further into this season than Plymouth, maybe.
Before we get on to the teams, and I want you to pick who you'd play for Town in this game, given that the new players coming in, and also the matchups, which I think is worth reflecting on, Hutchie, that bit you did. In previous seasons, a game like this would have been, well, this is a game that Town aren't going to win. They don't win games like this, these big games. Are we happy now that has been put to bed? Because they have beaten sides around them. But looking at something you've done for tomorrow, Stu, the record against the top seven this season, they've only won one game. 1-1, drawn 3, lost 2. So are we happy now, sitting here ahead of this, you'd have to argue, the biggest game of the season so far, that old malaise around Town and big games is put to bed? Or do they need to win something like this to truly say we're past that now?
Yeah, I mean, that is obviously now the case in terms of not beating the teams in the top 6-7 at the moment, because Peterborough and Portsmouth have dropped away so badly. I don't think you can take those away as statement wins, because they were at the time and still remain big wins. But yeah, what were the biggest wins of the second half of last season was the Wickham game, McKenna's very first match. This season, I've mentioned Derby, Peterborough recently, Portsmouth at home, but I think they could do with another one. And this would be a whole new level of win and statement win if they could win this match.
If you look back at games against the top six and those kind of fine margins, we've spoken about Barnsley are a top six team. Marcus Harness scored a goal that was ruled out wrongly, should have beaten Barnsley. Sam Morsi had a shot that he really should have scored in stoppage time to beat Bolton on the opening day. They didn't. They drew at Hillsborough because of a Michael Smith goal that was offside. Two goals from outside the box inside 10 minutes at Plymouth saw them go from winning to losing there. So they're right in these games though this time. Like when we've spoken about previous years of not competing with the top six, we're talking about them not competing with the top 10 at some points in Paul Lambert's career. They weren't beating the teams that were 10th. It's very different.
Rotherham, we've just played Rotherham last weekend, and that was a reminder of, you know, they were light years away from those Paul Warne Rotherham sides that got automatically promoted twice, weren't they? And you're right, that, you know, there's no golf in class between you. You feel like Ipswich go into all of these big games with every chance of winning. They might tip one way, they might tip the other. The Plymouth game at Home Park earlier in the season, that could have gone easily the other way. So I guess you have to look at it like that. But yeah, you'd still like maybe another one or two of those wins. If you're going to finish top two, you have to consistently beat, well, it doesn't matter whether it's a top half side, bottom half side, you just have to consistently win games, don't you? So, this one, 7 points between Plymouth, that could become the difference between that going down to 4 or rising up to 10. Feels quite significant, doesn't it? Even at this relatively early stage.
Yeah, and 4 with a game in hand, it would be as well.
Mm. Can we all agree, though, that if Town do indeed win this game, as we all hope they do, it would be the biggest win so far for Kieran McKenna? Would you say that?
be their biggest win in League One, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, agreed. The one game I missed out earlier was Plymouth, obviously, last season on Paul Mariner Day. And what a day that was. I would say there's probably been, five big wins, five statement wins since McKenna's come in, all at Portman Road. This would top the lot of them. And I think Andy's right. It would top anything that they've done in League One so far.
Right then, friends. Let's before we get to your actual teams, I want to go through this matchup that Hutchie did, because I think it's a big enough game that it merits us getting in a little bit deeper than normal. So you start with the keepers, Hutchie, in this comparison. Two of the best keepers in the league. How do you compare them and contrast them, and who do you think is the better keeper?
I can't tell you who the better keeper is, because I don't watch Michael Cooper anywhere near as much as Christian Walton. But I bet you anything that if Kieran McKenna, if they were offered a swap, neither team would say yes to it. And that's the mark, I would say, on this.
My phone's going off. That's
is that your ringtone?
No, that's, do you know what that is? That's a bloody, I'm just looking at the story you've written, and that's a bloody autoplay video, isn't it, on our website, which I just think happened.
That's not bad.
I didn't think that happened on your phone. So that was quite embarrassing.
Could be worse. No, I liked it. I don't think either manager would swap their goalkeeper. I think Christian Walton's levels haven't quite been at the complete dominance levels that he has been previously for Ipswich. But that's not to say he's not an exceptional goalkeeper. I wouldn't swap him for Cooper, certainly, and I bet you Plymouth wouldn't say the same. The one stat I did find on the two keepers that I thought was interesting was how busy they were. Like, what Walton makes an average of 1.6 saves per game. Cooper, this speaks to Stu's point. I almost called you Stuart there, very formal. Stu's point from earlier that Cooper's making an average of 3.7 saves a game. He's much busier, having to do a lot more. But both teams concede exactly a goal a game in the league, and that level of busyness from the goalkeepers is both equaling out at the same thing. If you wanted to, you could use that stat very coldly and just use that to tell you that Cooper's the better goalkeeper. But I think that's very, very simplistic, and you'd have to go a lot deeper to try and go into that. But I wouldn't be swapping Christian Walton for Michael Cooper.
So you're saying essentially level, but you would, yep, if you're offered, you're having Walton. Any, yep, thoughts on that, Stu, before we move on to the defenders?
Not really. Only the fact, I guess, Cooper, if you were talking about it purely from an asset point of view, has got a bit more age on his side. I think he's 23, isn't he? But Division's two best goalkeepers going head to head tomorrow, no doubt.
Like it. Defenders then, Hutchie, talk us through how you see the comparisons between the back lines for these sides.
I think firstly you need to talk about the systems a little bit, whereas Plymouth are kind of a 3-4-2-1 more strictly than Ipswich are, but we've spoken so many times here, haven't we, about how you can describe Ipswich's system as a 3-4-2-1 if you wanted to, or you can call it a 4-2-3-1. Essentially, these teams play very similar football, I think, which makes it quite nice for comparing them. I'd imagine everything about it looks like Plymouth will have a back three of James Wilson, who we obviously know very well, Lonwake in the middle, who is basically Virgil van Dijk's double, and Dan Scar, and then Ipswich will be Dadassian on the right with Wolfenden, Burgess and Davis as a left sider. They both defences concede a goal a game, and all of their strengths and weaknesses even themselves out, I would say, looking through the stats in terms of set-piece goals conceded, set-piece goals scored. They all kind of level out for me. Again, I probably wouldn't split the teams on this area of the pitch either.
And again, you've gone with can't be separated. Anything to add to that, Stu, before we move? I like this. Actually, the next category is the engine room, which I very much approve of.
No, not really. Only to say that I think everyone was surprised that James Wilson was the one that got let go from the defence during that demolition man summer under Paul Cook. Toto Ensiala was the one that stayed on. I think Wilson got named, was he supporters player of the year? Players player? I can't remember which award he got, but
the main one.
We knew he was he's a very solid League One defender, and it's no surprise that he's doing pretty well for Plymouth at the moment. He'll be their captain tomorrow in the absence of the suspended skipper. Hey. Joe Edwards.
Suspended kipper. Hutchie, engine
gentlemen,
room.
Sorry, I need to interrupt. We need to press pause on this. I forgot to pick my wife and child up from school. I forgot that I've got the car. She's just rung me. I was meant to be there 10 minutes ago.
So we, me and Hutchie could just plough on, should we?
It's up to you. I'll be there and back in 15 minutes if you want to just put it on hold. But I can't just leave them there, so I've got to go.
Well,
sorry.
Okay, fair enough.
So, Andy, unexpectedly, this is now a two-man podcast. Stu just realised he's forgotten to pick up his wife and child, which is quite a big thing. So he's had to put his hand up and dash out. And we'll plough on, shall we? Because time is running short on the day. And we need to prepare mentally for this game tomorrow. So we're just talking about the engine room. And I was in the middle of saying that you have... I wonder if it was the engine. Mention of the engine and the car, maybe, mate.
Yeah, maybe.
That was the link with Stu that made him suddenly remember. Anyway, you were saying Town of Advantage in that engine room.
Yeah, I can't remember if I managed to say that before.
I can't remember what you were saying, honestly.
I don't think we'd started it. But no. You're right, though. I do think Ipswich had the advantage in here. And that's both from the eye test, because I think Sam Morsy and Lee Evans are an exceptional League One central midfield pair. And that's backed up by the stats, kind of every major stat that you could want from a central midfield pair, they win on. But passing, both in terms of volume of passing and the accuracy of their passing, dribbling stats, which Morsy takes a heavy load of from Ipswich, compared to Evans, but they're top on that. They've scored more goals than their Plymouth counterparts, which are in general Adam Randall and Jordan Houghton. They're above them in that as well. Shooting, more shots per game, everything. They're on top of them. The one wrinkle here is that there could be a first league start for a player we've seen down here before and know fairly well, Jay Mitete, who has signed up for Plymouth on loan from Sunderland. We know how good all-round central midfielder he is. He was brilliant for Fleetwood down here, led to some transfer interest from Ipswich, which didn't come to anything. But that's a slight wrinkle here in that, obviously, if you're looking stats-wise, he doesn't factor into any of this Plymouth-wise. And the feeling is he could start. So a slight wrinkle there, but advantage Ipswich in the engine room.
And Stewie's car engine will be working overtime at the moment as he puts his foot down towards his...
Mate, the amount of grovelling you need to do.
You're in so much trouble. You're in so much trouble.
What were you doing? Just podcasting.
This is a shambles. Now my phone's going off again. What the hell is happening? That's an autoplay. That's going to be a real issue going forward on these podcasts, because quite often I like to read stories as we're talking about them. And obviously I need it in this instance. The width, Hutchie, if we can continue this train of thought. Who do you think's got the advantage here? Width is very important, obviously.
Yeah. I think I ultimately went for just an Ipswich advantage here. And that is down to Joe Edwards being suspended, the Plymouth captain. Played on the left last week with Barley Mumba, the Norwich loanee, on the right. But they normally play the other way round, and Mumba's likely to go back to the left this weekend with Edwards suspended. And I'm really looking forward to this, actually. Wes Burns and Barley Mumba, both players with four league goals this season, obviously. One on the right, one on the left for their teams, but that if you do the math, that adds up to them both being on the same side, Mark, and a little bit of push and pull, levering, getting up and down each other. That should be an interesting battle. I'm looking forward to that one. You also have to factor Leif Davis into any kind of width here. Like, and that's why it's not really wingers for Ipswich. It's width in general. It's assets and attributes. Davis is their width on the left side. The left-sided attacker, whoever that may be, comes inside, attacks tight, allowing Davis to get to get up the outside. And he is an assist king. He's got 7 in the league this season. He's third on that list in terms of League One assists. Maybe that's gone a little unnoticed, I think, just how productive he is. We know he's a good player, but in terms of the numbers he's producing, I think it's gone a little unnoticed quite how high he's featuring there. But also, he's also, I think, second on the key passes metric, whatever that is. I think assists are obviously key passes and things like that, but he's only behind Barry Bannon on that. And we know how good a player Barry Bannon is. So in terms of width, I'd give Ipswich an advantage in those areas, especially if it's a good Wes Burns day, which he's had a few of those recently, which are kind of trending upwards. So that coupled with a suspended kipper, should be advantage Ipswich.
Okay, there's two categories left. Then you've got attackers and strikers. Now, attackers, obviously, Plymouth have had a bit of a blow in terms of losing Whittaker. How do you think those two units match up then?
It's interesting. That's a blow, isn't it? It's not just Whittaker as well. It's Finn Azaz, who's been out for some time now with an injury, and he's not fully back yet. I think he's getting there, but he's not fully back. So actually, their two kind of main, let's call them number 10s. Their two number 10s are unavailable to them. Whittaker left with, like, took 9 goals with him when he left. I think Azaz had 6 from the early weeks of the season before he got injured. So playing without them is big. Stu's already mentioned Callum Wright, who signed from Blackpool. He's clearly a good player, but that's a heavy weight to be carrying coming into the side. And Danny Mayer is in there as well. Danny Mayer is someone I really like as a player. I'd liken him to Shaun Iluko in terms of ability, what he gives his team, without necessarily chucking out the numbers, as it's called in football now, goals, assists. Doesn't quite have them, but he is a facilitator and a really good player, so not to be underestimated. Ipswich, though, have an advantage for me. We've talked about Connor Chaplin's purple patch tendencies. He is in prime purple patch territory right now. He's scoring goal after goal after goal, and has a Player of the Month award to sort of cap that. Hopefully that's not the cap on the end of a purple patch for him, but he's in great form. And then he could be partnered by any one of four players there. Luko being one, Marcus Harness another, Kyle Edwards unlikely, but also Nathan Broadhead. So there are options there for Ipswich, and I think it all adds up to an advantage in this area of the pitch for them.
And just finally, strikers, and then let's finish with who you think, when you chop it all up and look at all the units together, who you think has the edge, if indeed one team does.
This is where Plymouth come out on top to me. And again, it's not a slight on Freddie Ladapo, which it really is not, because he was brilliant last weekend, and I think he's done well for Ipswich in general. But there's obviously George Hurst in the mix here now, who is yet to make a debut, unproven, but has pedigree at this level. So there's reason for optimism. Of course there is, but Plymouth have got 3 tried and tested strikers who have all made significant contributions for Schumacher this season. Ryan Hardy and Niall Ennis are both on 8 goals. Sam Cosgrove is on 6. Those are league goals, purely league goals. So all 3 of them contributing. They've started a game each over the last 3 matches. So who knows? Who knows which one of the 3 he'll go with? But each of them has delivered for their manager. So he's got options, be it from the start or from the bench. And I would give Plymouth an advantage here.
Okay, so we've gone through all the units there, the positions, and you've given edges to one side and the other. If you look at it as a whole, Hutchie, without your blue-tinted spectacles on, who do you think has the edge, or can you separate them?
I think there are other factors that then come in. You've got home soil. That's another factor that comes in for Ipswich. Obviously, Plymouth cannot have that as an advantage because this game is being played in Suffolk. That's a fact. A big home crowd. Ipswich are used to these now. It's not in the past. We've kind of seen them not deliver in front of the really big crowds on the big nights, they have been doing that now. That Derby game was a massive night for Ipswich, not just because of the size of the crowd. It was on TV. They wore that Ed Sheeran kit, which seems ridiculous to say, but wearing that kit, I think, added another layer of pressure because it just invited the attention. Mm-hmm. You know, I love football kits, Mark, but generally I can't sit here and argue that wearing a different coloured shirt should bring more pressure. But on that occasion, it was just another little layer of attention and they delivered. So that's not going to be a problem for Ipswich. They'll thrive on that. So they've got the home crowd. And also, we've just run through the team. And I think that central midfield advantage is huge for Ipswich here. So that's the one big advantage I can see between the others. I've tipped one way or another. By a cigarette paper, which I don't have any of, but
no.
That's what I've done. But central midfield, big advantage, and I'd give Ipswich an edge in this one.
Okay, I see waving mischievously in the virtual green room is a certain Mr. Watson. We're bringing back in.
All right.
Yeah, what's occurring?
Yeah, all good. All good in the hood. You're only on central midfield.
No, we're done, mate.
You've got there and back in that time.
Yeah.
Wow. Were you in a spaceship?
No, I just drove recklessly, endangering the lives of small children.
Fair enough. Well, you joined us at a good juncture then, Stu. So we've gone through all the positions, the various units that the sides have. Hutchie thinks there's a slight edge to Ipswich. But how about the Ipswich team? In terms of selection, I suppose it's been fairly straightforward. There's always curveballs thrown in, aren't there? But a lot of it you probably write down now. The interest here is, of course, Town have three new players that could potentially play in this game. You'd imagine Luongo won't be one of those players. But how about their new toys up front, George Hurst and Nathan Broadhead? Your thoughts on those, Stewie, and then maybe reel off a team that you would be putting out.
Yeah, I would say out of those two, Broadhead is the more likely to start because he's played a lot more football in the first half of the season for Wigan. Kind of, he's either been a starter or a sub off the bench, played a lot more games. Hurst hasn't really played a huge amount for Blackburn during his loan spell. Three starts, I think it is, in the first half of this season. So I'd say Broadhead is the more likely. But the team I'm going to predict is the team that started the Boxing Day win against Oxford, which at the time, I think Andy and I both said this is Ipswich's best team on paper when everyone's fit, which they were getting back to that. It was an unchanged team, very rarely off the back of that for the Portsmouth game. Obviously, then illness came along and unsettled things for Lincoln and he mixed it up a little bit for the Cup game. But I think he'll go back to that Oxford team with Broadhead and Hurst as weapons to come off the bench. I could see them coming on, possibly even as a duo at some stage in the second half. And whether Ipswich are ahead, chasing the game, trying to get their noses in front, you can just imagine the noise that would come when you saw those two sort of stripped and ready to come on. That would be my prediction for the team.
So what was that team, for those who can't remember that, like me?
That would be Walton, Danasian, Wolfenden, Burgess, Davis, Morsi and Evans, as well as Humphreys did last weekend against Rotherham. You have to go back to your tried and trusted senior pairing there in central midfield for a game like this. Burns, Chaplin, Harness and Ladapo. So the big question mark there for me would be whether it's Broadhead or Harness in that inside left forward. But Ladapo's performance last weekend, coupled with the fact this is another one of his former clubs who he scored against earlier in the season, tips me to say that he'll start. So the big question mark for me is whether it's Broadhead or Harness in that inside left forward position.
Hutchie, so Stewie's left the new shiny toys on the bench there. Would you do that?
I wouldn't. I think he's right. I think that is what will happen. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that, but I would start Broadhead. I would because I think you can leave Plymouth guessing a little bit if he starts about exactly what he's going to do and where he's going to be. I think that could be a bit of a tool for them. Plus, I think he's a very, very good player. I would start him personally, but I wouldn't be shocked and or even disappointed really if Harness started, because that Oxford game, that Ipswich were brilliant, in, particularly in that second half, they were very, very good. And that was their best team at that point. Harness had a good game, and he's shown that he can deliver in moments for Ipswich, so I'm fine with that. But for me, I'd start Broadhead. Undoubtedly, Ladapo over Hurst from the start up top, though.
Yeah, he's earned that, hasn't he? And the other conversation you have to have around the team, Stu, as you point out in your preview, which is going online and in print tomorrow, is the battle for just being on the bench. There are an embarrassment of riches just to get into those spots now.
Yeah, so McKenna's confirmed that he had 22 outfield players in training this week. We've gone from scrapping around to get an 18-man squad together throughout sort of November, December time with all those injuries, but now with Greg Lee coming back and Evans and Harness and various players back, plus the new boys, there's an embarrassment of riches. And we know that it's going to be, if you start working it out, if we go with that Oxford team as a base, put Broadhead and Hurst in there, you've got Rav Halaki as a backup goalkeeper, that takes you to 14. That leaves four spots available in this squad. And by my maths, there's 10 players vying for those four spots. I can read them out to you if you want, and perhaps you could make a prediction as to who will make the cut. Kane Vincent-Young, George Edmondson, Richard Keogh, Greg Lee, Massimo Luongo, Cameron Humphreys, Kyle Edwards, Shawnee Aluko, Caden Jackson, and Gassana Hadmi. So 10 players there, and only four of them are going to be making this squad.
Hutchie, who are you putting on the bench out of those?
I've got two benches written out on a bit of paper in front of me.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, one is the one that I would think that I would go with, and the other is what's left. And the one, so I'll tell you the one that's left. It's pretty good. Which one do you want? Do you want the one I'd go for or the one that's...
Give us the one you go for first, yeah.
Okay, so Hladky.
Yeah.
Vincent Young, Edmondson, Humphreys, Harness, Hurst, Aluko is the seven that I've got, which leaves a second bench of Coleman, Keogh, Lee, Luongo, Edwards, Jackson, and Ahabmi.
Yeah, that's pretty tasty, isn't it? That's a good demonstration of talent.
It's ridiculous,
strength
quite
in
frankly.
Depth. Yeah. Okay, so those are the sides and the benches. Other things
what
around the game.
Would you disagree with any of those, though? Like, I think who were the four then?
So you read that bench out to me again.
Well, I've gone Hladky, Vincent Young, Edmondson, Humphreys, Harness, but only because I would have had Broadhead in the starting lineup.
Yeah.
Hurst, and Aluko.
Okay.
Aluko and Jackson was I thought about this. I had a nice little chicken breast with some rice for my lunch, and I thought about this very deeply while I was eating that this bench, and that was the most difficult one.
Well, you're talking about, there's some direct battles here, isn't there? Luongo or Humphreys, and I think Humphreys probably takes that at the moment because of his performance last weekend and Luongo not really being match sharp at the moment. Edmondson or Keogh is a direct battle for a centre-half spot. You'd imagine Edmondson is ahead of Keogh in that one. And then it's Lee versus Vincent Young. Vincent Young obviously brings a bit more versatility. Could do both fullback positions, could play higher up if you needed him to.
That's why I went for him over Lee, because I think Lee's a better player. But if Genoid Donasian, as he did recently, hobbles out of a game after 15 minutes, you're then having to, then what do you do?
That's true.
Wes Burns back there, and then you've sacrificed something there, and you've have to change your attacking plans, whereas Vincent Young can play both sides and cover all eventualities there. This is ridiculous, isn't it, Mark?
Tough call that one, isn't it? I mean, I'd always want Aluko on the bench. He's been such a joy to watch recently, and he's someone that can come on and just calm things down and keep the ball if you need to. So I think you need to have him on there. And that's it. And that is it, isn't it? Which means Kyle Edwards... I mean, Caden Jackson were leaving off the bench there, who I thought had a really good game last weekend. McKenna loves him. You know, I know he splits the opinion of fans, but we're at the stage now where Caden Jackson might not be making the squad.
For me, that's because I think he's either a starter or not in the squad. And that, because he doesn't, there aren't many games where there aren't many games where you look at it and think this is one for Caden Jackson, right from the bench. From the start, when they changed things and bespoke game plans and the way they played, that he's had some really good games for Ipswich, like stretching teams, particularly down that right side. But
is there an argument that he might go for a top-heavy bench and put a Jackson on instead of Kane Vincent-Young, for example? And then if you had to, in the worst-case scenario, reshuffle the back four, you could drop Burns into to right back and put Caden Jackson further forward. Just it's a risk,
yeah.
But it would be a calculated risk so that you could then turn to a bench and bring on a lot more attackers at some stage. I don't know. It's going to be fascinating. I'm actually going to be more interested in who he picks on the bench than the starting 11 in some ways this weekend.
That's difficult because, like, would you then consider not putting a centre half on the bench and putting a full is from the bench, is Vincent Young and the fact that Danasian can move inside and things like that, is that make it more flexible for you if you're trying to give an extra man, or go crazy and don't put a goalkeeper on the bench? We haven't seen that since the three sub days, have we? Really, but
I think that's reckless, if I'm honest. I think a game like this, you know, the probability is you very rarely need your backup goalkeeper, but when you've got seven subs to go without one, I think that would be reckless.
Yeah. The reason I left Jackson off and went for Aluko is because you're probably, in this scenario, you're not going to use him as a central striker, because if you're taking Ladapo off, it's going to be Hurst. And then it's how McKenna's shown that he likes changing those two tens in every game. So you need to have two of them. And Harness, you're not going to leave Harness out of the squad, because quite frankly, he's probably going to be in the starting lineup. So that would mean you're not going to leave Broadhead out. And then, as you say, Aluko's got his kind of bespoke role from the bench, potentially. And as well as being a very good player, he's something a bit different for a certain scenario that can play potentially.
Doesn't this bring into sharp focus the debate we had right at the very start about adding more players to this squad? Already you're having to disappoint six players there. Massive game. We're all excited about it. And you've had to go and tell six players probably at some point today, you're not even in the squad. I think you can stomach being on the bench nowadays with five subs rule. You know, you're going to have a role to play at some point. But to not even be making the squad is quite difficult. And I'm sure, you know, we'll be talking about, maybe one or two exits towards the end of this window as well. We've talked about Ahadmi, but maybe even someone like Carl Edwards now comes into a bit of a question mark, because you don't want too many players that you're disappointing every week, because I know they're all good lads and they've all been recruited for personality reasons and character reasons and all of that. But if you're training all week and you know you've got nothing at the end of it, it's very difficult to kind of be that cheery, energetic person that's dragging, you know, raising the standards of training day in, day out. I think people forget about that side of things sometimes.
Just go back to your actual bench then, Hutchie, because there were so many names being thrown around then. I kind of got lost as to who was actually on your bench.
Okay, so Kladke is a non-discussion, yeah. Unless the reckless card
unless
gets
we're
played.
Reckless, yeah.
Vincent Young, we've discussed. Edmondson over Keogh as the centre-half. Humphreys over Luongo as the central midfield. And then the three, that leaves three attacking spots. And I've got Harness, which is a big, big slash Broadhead there, because Harness could well start, I've put him on the bench. Hurst, who is undoubtedly going to be on the bench, and then Aluko over Jackson.
Okay. Interesting.
We'll see. But a bench of Coleman, Lee, Keogh, Luongo, Edwards, Jackson, Ahadmi isn't too bad, is it? If that was Ipswich Town's bench, that's not bad.
Yeah.
You'd look at that seeing some game changers. You see, oh, yeah, Edwards is on there, the spark that you can bring on off the bench.
That's what I mean. That's what I was going to say in terms of changing games. Certainly Edwards it would be in that category, wouldn't he? And I know you're saying that Jackson maybe isn't, but he's got something that can always change games, which is pace.
It's tough on Kyle Edwards because he actually made a difference when he did well when he came off the bench last week against Rotherham. And I think his first touch was a really lovely ball around the corner that led to the Ladapo goal going around the goalkeeper. But I just... He's had chances and he hasn't had chances. He's never had a run of starts in the team, but I don't know if I think McKenna may have seen enough now to decide that he can't hang his hat on him. He'll have really good games and really excite you. And then he has some flaky moments off the bench as well, where he's just not at it. And I think maybe McKenna's edging towards the fact that he's not someone that he's going to be able to hang his hat on long term. And these players come in, just kind of push him towards the exit door, along with his mate Rakeem Harper, who's it's not quite happened for him at Ipswich Town either.
I just wonder, in a game like this, though, he is a spark, you know, an X factor almost in a game like this that you don't otherwise potentially have to throw on someone who's going to run at defenders, try things at other people.
But so are all those other players that we've mentioned as well. You know, someone has to miss out. You'd say Aluko is someone that can excite people and pick the lock. You know, we're talking about good players now. That's where Ipswich are at.
Who would you have him on the bench ahead? I agree with everything you've said about him. Completely agree with everything both of you have said about Kyle Edwards. But who, if we're being in the ruthless side, which one of the seven that I've named on the bench would you take off it for Edwards?
Yeah, yeah.
Imagine the conversations that they're having in Kieran McKenna's office at Playford Road. Because they've actually got to make these decisions. Not
Caden Jackson's ahead of him on the bench, and we've not got him on the bench. So, that's kind of where Kyle Edwards is at, I think, in the pecking order, unfortunately, which is a shame because rewind to that Cambridge game, and we thought that was going to be the sort of delayed liftoff for him, but just hasn't quite kicked on as we'd hoped since then. But this is the embarrassment of riches that Kieran McKenna's got. It won't last, I'm sure. There's always another injury around the corner, a suspension. At this moment in time, though, they've got a power-packed squad that's going to be the envy of many.
To be a fly on the wall, in that chat around who plays and who's on the bench. Right then, that's the team then. Good chat around that. How about the other kind of X factors in this game? We've got a full house, a sellout. Is it officially a sellout? I've lost track. I
did ask this earlier this afternoon. This is 4 o'clock Thursday afternoon. Friday afternoon, sorry.
It's Friday,
Friday afternoon. It's normally Thursday. At the moment, it is sold out. That has not been officially confirmed because I think there's the potential for the odd little juggle from the security people that might free up the odd ticket here and there.
It's a sellout.
Which is 29,000 something.
Yeah, we don't know. And Mark Ashton doesn't know because we asked him in that podcast before Christmas, what is the capacity? And he just said, I'm not trying to be funny, but I don't know because it flexes and it changes all the time depending on how many away fans come. And obviously that changes how much segregation they have to have, how many seats they kind of cover with netting to separate them and all that sort of stuff. They've opened one of the seating blocks that hadn't been used for many years. They'd managed to get that open, hadn't they? So they're trying to work hard to kind of get all areas of the ground open and accessible. But I guess we'll kind of find out. This is probably the closest to what a capacity is going to be. So it'll be interesting to see what that number is when it gets read out tomorrow.
And bizarrely, no one knows when the last sellout was either, which is kind of shrouded in mystery. But it's not for a bloody long time.
It's a very, very long time.
Yeah.
They didn't even sell out the playoff semi-final at home to Norwich. So that tells you an awful lot.
Indeed. And then the other two X factors for me are the return of Marcus Stewart, which you've got a full stadium, all the emotion around the game, and then all the emotion around Marcus Stewart and what's happening with him. Him returning, he's going to be on the pitch at half time. Could that be a potential factor in terms of the emotion in the crowd and the almost a kind of redoubling of support if things aren't going well for Town? And then also the ref, who I understand is a bit card happy. And in a game like this, one always has to have concern around tempers and blood boiling and someone getting sent off. Would you say?
I really hope that we're talking about one part of that narrative after the game, the Marcus Stewart narrative. And you're right, there's going to be a huge amount of emotion here. Him coming back to Portman Road for the first time since that very sad news that he's got MND. And then you've got the prospect of a new signing coming on in the same shirt number that Marcus Stewart had when he made such a big difference as a mid-season signing. I hope all that narrative wraps up together and And we're talking about that. And we're not talking about the referee, which we've talked about far too many times this season. Far too many times we've heard Kieran McKenna talking about Ipswich not getting the rub of the green and being due some decisions. And Andy referenced the Barnsley game from earlier in the season and that Harness disallowed goal. And McKenna went on a right, not rant, because he never rants, but a calm and collected dissection of Ipswich not getting the decisions and referees need to be carefully selected for big games that don't want to get unnecessarily involved in decisions. I hope and pray that we're not talking about Andy Woolmer after this game.
Thoughts, Hutchie?
I would agree with that. Talking about referees isn't fun, and just how incredible would it be if that number 27 narrative played out in full? Even the games are comparable. Obviously, George Hurst hasn't signed from Plymouth, but that goal that Marcus scored was against his old club, who at the time were the league. I think they were either the league leaders or second or something, or they were right at the top of that division at that point. A game of this size in the 27 shirt at Portman Road, with Marcus sat in the front row of the director's box would be incredible. Football's beautiful like that. It can deliver things that nothing else in the world can really deliver. So come on, football gods, give us
that's,
that.
That's sport as a whole, isn't it? The amount of times it stories that are, if you saw in a film, you'd go, that's ridiculous. That would never happen. That's completely Hollywood saccharine nonsense. But these things do happen. Yeah.
There's one the other day in the NFL, wasn't there, Mark? Obviously, DeMar Hamlin, who many people would have seen an NFL player had a cardiac arrest during a game and was very much on the cusp of living or dying. He miraculously pulled through and is home now. He plays for the Buffalo Bills, and in their first game after that happened, the whole stadium was incredible. The noise for him was incredible. And then on the very first play of the game, Buffalo ran the kickoff back for a touchdown, which it was just amazing that can happen in sport. Sport can give you that and deliver that like nothing else, because it is unscripted. But at times it just feels like it is, because it does deliver. Conversely, if you're Chelsea, your new signing can get sent off for a horrendous knee-high tackle in a vital Premier League game to heap more pressure on your manager. It can go the other way as well. But
if the £2.5 million tackle.
Yeah, exactly. if something like that could happen in this game, it would be unbelievable. But even if it doesn't, it'll be brilliant to see Marcus, and he knows how much love comes at him from Ipswich Town fans, but he'll him and his wife Louise will experience that themselves at this game, regardless of the result on the pitch.
Yeah. Okay, special day, special things happening. Could there be a special narrative? Boys, it's time for predictions. Stewie, what do you think is going to happen in front of that full house at Portman Road tomorrow? Third place Ipswich Town host, table-topping Plymouth, with the return of Marcus Stewart all thrown in. What do you think is going to happen?
I have to say a win, Mark.
I was dramatic about it. Pause
there, because I thought you was expecting me to be the boring party pooper there, wasn't you?
No. So
I've got concerns about this. I go right back to the stuff that we said at the start of this. I do think that Ipswich have got more backing up what they've done this season. I feel they've been really consistent. I feel like they've backed up disappointing and frustrating days quite quickly. I think they've upgraded the squad again. I think there's some real energy going into this game. I think last weekend Rotherham was just what the doctor ordered. You think about it, if you park the Portsmouth and Lincoln games away over Christmas and you kind of say, well, okay, there was a lot of illness in the squad, it was a hectic period, and you look at the last home games, it's Oxford, it's Peterborough, it's Rotherham. That's three really good home performances and results to carry into this game. And with the crowd, with the new signings, with everything, I think Ipswich win this game. I don't think they'll have it all their own way. This game has ended 1-0 to Ipswich on the last two occasions they've met at Portman Road. And I've gone for the same again.
1-0. Right then, Hutchie, have you got a £1 million pick to go with this, or are you just going to go straight with the score?
Yeah, it's not a very exciting £1 million pick, but I think both Sam Morsy and Lee Evans will be booked in this game inside the first half, which will lead to a few nerves as to whether they can see the game out. But they're both good at that, to be fair. They're, Morsy in particular is very good at pushing the limit until the yellow comes and then reeling back in again. In terms of the game, I see it going the same way as Stu, but I'm going for a 2-1 win for Ipswich, kind of possibly even a reverse of what happened at Home Park earlier in the season. Town to come from behind and win 2-1.
George Hurst to score the winner.
If you ask me to pick who I want to score the winner, absolutely George Hurst.
That would be amazing, wouldn't it? I'll give you 10-1 on that. Morsy, because if you said, I think Sam Morsy is almost certain to get booked in this game. I think that would be nailed on. So if you add Evans on, I'll give you 10-1.
And inside the first half?
Yeah.
Yeah. Can we chuck the result in as well? Let's go power pack and the 2-1 come from behind victory. All of it.
All of it.
All of it. Hell. All of it into one.
Yeah. 50-1.
I mean, I'd like a little bit more, but I'll take your odds and I'll put £100,000 on that.
Do we actually know what the pot is anymore?
I can quickly find out. We've peeked behind the curtain. We've got new laptops this week, and I haven't checked that file that I've kept it all on is still here, but it should be. Yeah, it is, because I followed the processes sent over by the IT man to the letter. We've got £2.1 million in the pot. So, turns out we haven't done one since the Fleetwood game.
Wow.
So, yeah.
You were running away with it. This is a good game to relaunch it with, though. Before we go to any other business, I've got some shout-outs I need to give. Numerous shout-outs. I have to mention the food bank collection in the fan zone before the game. A really nice initiative that Town fans are getting involved in. So people are being asked to bring along milk, tinned tomatoes, tinned meat and fish, instant mashed potatoes, tinned fruit veg, jam, cereals, toiletries, warm clothes, long grain rice and ready meals. A really good thing to be happening. Nice to see fans get behind that and supporting folks less fortunate. Also need to shout out Tom Tomlin on Twitter, who I understand this is his first game of the season. He's picked a good one to be attending tomorrow. And also, because I forgot to do it on the last podcast, he says, frantically trying to find the message, I said that I would give a shout out to Ed, who I reckon is our most, in terms of distance, our most long distance listener. He sent us a picture saying that he listens to the pod often while he's waiting to board the ferry from New Zealand's North Island to the South Island. So that's a long, long way away. Ed Nolloth, born and raised in Wenhaston near Halesworth, and he's lived in New Zealand for 5 years. So consider yourself shouted out, Ed. If you think you live further away and listen to this pod, do let us know, because that is going to take some beating. Right then, friends, any other business, anything else to mention around this game? Anything you want to share? Any feelings you want to kind of talk about before we take our leave and go and enjoy a Friday night?
I like this idea of people bringing their scarves. That's kind of grown organically on social media, I've seen, to kind of everyone swinging their scarves above their head as the teams come out the tunnel, and they're giving it a blast of Hey Jude, which I assume they will do. They normally do for these bigger games. So that could be quite a nice visual sight that goes with this.
Are you going to bring a scarf?
I can if you want.
I'll bring a scarf.
Okay.
Are you allowed to twizzle it, though? Very strict etiquette in the press box. You're not meant to show any kind of partisan behaviour.
Well, that's just building the atmosphere, isn't it? That's neutral.
You're going to bring a half and half scarf then, Hutchie?
Yeah. Bring one of those. Don't get many of those in League One.
No.
If this was a top of the Premier League game, they'd be being sold aplenty on Portman Road.
So we're all saying Town win. Stewie saying 1-0, Hutchie saying 2-1. I think I'd agree with the 2-1. And if it, if that wonderful narrative happened, wow, what a day to be at Portman Road. Anything else to mention, boys, before I do my little outro?
No other business.
Okay. Well, sorry. Obviously, this is significantly later than normal, this podcast. Unfortunately, various things like Hutchie just said there, we've been having new laptops and various things like that, which has meant that things have been delayed. So, yeah, that's the reason it's late. But we wanted to make sure that we did one because clearly it's a game of such huge magnitude that it felt only fitting that we did a podcast beforehand. Please support our sponsors. Use the code KOA at manscaped.com for 20% off. And free delivery on all that excellent clobber they've got there. And also, of course, the boys at Ginger Pickle. If you like a ginger pickle, Google Ginger Pickle and they will help you optimize your SEO, your digital marketing, anything you want in that sphere, Tony Southgate and his boys will help you with. So then, friends, all that is remains to be said then, we are on the eve of a heavyweight clash at Portman Road. In the blue corner, Ipswich Town. In the green corner, normally the red, but in the green corner in this game, Plymouth Argyle. The battle for automatic promotion starts now. Let's get ready to rumble! Enjoy the game. We'll be back next week.
Crime to football, Brexit to football. For more great podcasts from Archon, head to audioboom.com/channel/Archon.
Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? If you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. Choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.